This episode of Storyworthy is brought to you in part by Baso.com. Baso is a shopping and style inspiration site that allows you to shop for tens of millions of products from thousands of stores and brands. And Baso now has a free app available. It's like Pinterest, but for shopping. So head on over to Baso.com. You guys are going to love this. This is Christine Blackburn, and I want to personally thank each and every one of you guys for listening to Storyworthy. Storyworthy has more listeners than ever before, and it's thanks to you guys. So please tell a friend, a coworker, or a family member about the Storyworthy podcast, and then we can keep this train rolling. Now let's get on with it.
Hey, it's Fred Stoller. You're listening to Storyworthy. Is that what it's called?
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from Charles Lindbergh's house on Long Island, New York, where he lived in 1940 when he was spokesman of the America First Committee, which advocated isolationism.
Is that true?
That is true. He was a big isolationist.
But I didn't know the word isolationism.
Isolationism was a huge issue in the country before World War II. People were like, this is Europe's war. We shouldn't get involved with it. Then Pearl Harbor came, and then everybody was like, hey, screw them, and we're jumping in.
And so why are we at his house?
Because isolation is our topic today.
Right.
And isolationism is what that meant to me, and therefore we're at Charles Lindbergh's house. Also, they did offer us a tax break. So we've driven our mobile van here.
The Storyworthy van of truth,
which we drove across the country, and it gets terrible mileage. So we really need all the tax breaks we can get.
All right. Fair enough. You guys, tonight, our guest is Fred Stoller. Woo! Fred Stoller is here. You know, Hannes, he is an actor and a comedian and a writer and a producer, and he's very, very busy.
Yes.
And he brings forth the topic isolation.
Yes.
Isolationism. I don't like isolation.
Yeah. I prefer it many times in my life. You know me, I'm a homebody. It's like when I get home from my job at the theme park dealing with every fucking asshole from around the world, I just want to go home and I'll watch some Breaking Bad on Netflix, or I'll put on TV Land and watch Hot in Cleveland Marathon. Yeah, you heard me. I'll have it on the background while my fiance and I sit back to back playing Scrabble with each other on the computer.
Yeah.
Even though we have a Scrabble game.
You're living a dream, is what you're doing.
I'm living the dream, baby.
No, but the fact is, Fred brings the topic isolation, but I don't think it's about, I mean, I hear what you're saying. You're talking about the context of where you work at Universal Studios, and it's very busy, and there's thousands of people every day, and then going home, but I don't think you're going home to isolation. You're just going home for some peace and quiet.
Well, yeah, but I think where that, you know, that, like I say, with the computers, I think we're all being a little more isolated than we used to be. I mean, it's like that you can.
Oh, in other words, you don't have to. I see what you're saying.
You're not interacting with people directly.
Right. Recently, I read how teenagers don't get their driver's license as early as they used to. Like, we would get our license at 16.
Yeah, because they don't feel the need to get away. They're already getting away
through their
cell phones. Goddamn kids. Back in my day.
Hey, I did want to mention, folks, if you're listening to the show Storyworthy and you enjoy the show, why not support the show? And here's how you do it. Hannes, tell them.
Well, you could go on storyworthypodcast.com, click on our Amazon ad, and go to Amazon and shop normally for your nefarious needs.
Yeah, that's right. In other words, look, kids are back to school. We're going to be Christmas shopping soon. Whenever you need to go to Amazon.com, go to storyworthypodcast.com first. Then you click on our Amazon ad, and you are indeed helping this show.
Yay! And I like how we were just ragging on computers and isolationism, and all of a sudden, oh, now that it can make us money. What you need to do is tell your wife to shut the fuck up, go on your computer, and click on the Amazon ad,
and
all right?
Buy your porno through Amazon.com.
Why is that
so hard?
Right, exactly.
You know, as long as you brought it up, Hannes, I'll say this.
Yeah.
You know, I've been doing audiobooks recently in
my
closet.
That's true. That's true. In your closet,
so
which you've turned into a
damn depressing, because it's hot in my closet. I'm sweating. Pouring down my face. I'm trying to read these goddamn audiobooks, you know. So that's why the people should be supporting the Storyworthy podcast to get Christine out of the closet.
Right, out of the closet, literally, and stop
but
doing pornographic audiobooks.
If you don't want to do that, then when you go to Amazon to buy my latest audiobook, and are you ready for this, Hannes?
Yeah, what's it called?
Mind Control 101, Hypnotizing My Brother's Best Friend. It's erotica.
Yes, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say porn, it's erotica.
No, it's porn. The point is this, it's only a 45-minute long book, and it's my first book. And I'm not going to make
Most guys only make it about 3 minutes
I'm not going to make any money off it, but I'm trying to jump into this whole new world of audiobooks because, you know, there's money to be made. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
But so then that was only 45 minutes, but I've taken on this new project, Hannes. It's a 12-hour audiobook.
Oh, right. Isn't that the one about...
Yeah, ask me what it's on.
What's it about?
Suicide. So there you
hilarious.
Have it, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to support the Storyworthy podcast and therefore keep me out of the closet talking about suicide.
If you could get her out by chapter 3, that'd be great because it's a 12-chapter book and this is going to take for the rest of our lives. So,
which are
shortening as we read the book.
All right, so that's that pitch. And then, folks, we're also, Storyworthy is an official selection in the LA Podfest happening October 4th through the 6th in Santa Monica. And we are on October 5th.
With
our guest, Pearl Adey.
Ooh.
She's an amazing bluesy singer-songwriter.
Right.
And Jim
she
Wilson,
was on the show before?
She's been on our show. And Jim Wilson, who accompanies her on guitar, and he is just an incredible rocker from the Rollins Band and
right.
Mother Superior. And Pearl is fantastic. So she's
Do we
want to
mention any of her family connections, her husband?
Her husband? Oh, well... Now, her husband is Scott Ian from Anthrax, but I didn't say he's going to be at the podcast.
He's not going to be at the podcast.
Pearl
Will
Adey
not happening.
Is on our
Pearl
show.
Pearl Adey is on the show.
And we're really looking forward to that. So anyway, folks, if you want more information, you go to LAPodFest.com.
LAPodFest.com. Oh, I'm sick of us already. Let's get to Fred Stoller. Fred Stoller is awesome.
Yeah,
Fred Stoller,
honestly,
by the way, is the author of one of my favorite episodes of Seinfeld ever, The Soup.
The Soup Nazi. Right.
The Soup.
It's different. And he wrote that.
He wrote that.
He
and
wrote
I just,
episodes of Seinfeld, and then he also performed on episodes of Seinfeld.
Yeah.
So he
See,
has
we've
kind
had,
of,
and we don't want to pigeonhole him in Seinfeld, but we've had Rick Overton, the Drake, on. We've had the Wiz, Toby Huss, but this is the first person we've had on who was actually on the staff of Seinfeld, and
that's
to
right.
me
so
in my isolationism as I sit and watch Seinfeld while I play online Scrabble. This is a very important thing to me.
Honest, I hate being isolated. do you know what I mean? Like being isolated where you're literally
isolated,
away from people.
Having isolation thrust upon you as opposed to choosing it like
that's
I
my
do.
Point. That's exactly right. I hate not hearing people outside, you know, like activity, life. And here's my example. All right. Now, many of our listeners know I was in the Peace Corps in the South Pacific in the Kingdom of Tonga, and I lived on an island with 67 people. Now, there was no running water, no electricity, no stores. Obviously, no roads, no paths. If that's not isolated, I don't know what it is. You know, I don't know what it is. But there were villagers. There were only 67 of them. But still, they were out and about in the village. Things were happening. They were feeding pigs or chickens. They were washing clothes. The women were cooking in common umus, which are like an earthen oven underground. The kids were playing with sticks and broken buckets. Was I isolated? I wasn't isolated. I really felt like I was in a community. Mm. All right, so... Fast forward a few months later. Some of our listeners already know this, but this is the story. Okay. I got really sick when I was in the Peace Corps, and I had to leave the country. I fly to Hawaii to get some tests done, and they find out I have cancer, and I have to go to Washington, D.C. for surgery, and I have to take out my kidney. And finally, after a few months, I have to go back to Pittsburgh, where I'm from, to get chemotherapy. Okay, that's my hometown. Now, my sister offers...
That's the worst sentence in the world, chemotherapy in Pittsburgh.
My sister offers to let me stay with her for a while, because obviously I don't have, you know, I was not supposed to be here.
Right.
In fact, somebody made me a shirt at one point that said, I'm not even supposed to be here, because everything was so, you know, the rug was taken out from under me. And this, though, at my sister's house, this is where the real isolation begins. Now, my sister lives in a large, beautiful home. That I actually found her that house years prior in my 2 short years as a real estate agent. It's just her and her husband and a boxer dog. And now there's me there. And I'm like, you know, the sick kid in the spare room. Now, in the mornings after my sister and her husband would leave for work, you know, I'd wander around the house thinking about the 67 people in my village and what they are doing right now. Much of the same, I expect, feeding the animals, building a latrine, kids throwing rocks at each other. But here in my sister's house, the quietness was deafening. I could hear various clocks ticking in other rooms, and now and then I'd hear the refrigerator make a sound, or maybe it was the ice maker. I'd look out the window for any sign of life. Although there were houses everywhere, beautiful homes, I'd never see any people. It was like a hydrogen bomb had dropped, and the houses remained, but the people were gone. I guess they were all at work. I'd dream that the mailman would come. Maybe there would be a door-to-door salesman. I'd crank up Howard Stern, and I'd try to drown out the silent void. I walked around the house, and I'd walk around the house again. Then I'd walk around the neighborhood. Never saw a soul, and I felt isolated. So I had to get back to the city. I just had to. Even though I was ill, I didn't have a car, I got a studio apartment back in Shadyside, my old neighborhood in Pittsburgh. I call it my chemo apartment. You can imagine how fondly I remember it. But it's where I lived when I was going through this chemotherapy. And so I started taking the bus again. It was like I was back in college. And my apartment was on the 10th floor, and it was just one room with a tiny bathroom off the side. The light bulb was out in the bathroom, and I never changed it for 6 months I lived there. It was always dark. I didn't care. The neighbors were cranky. The elevator stunk. I heard police cars and ambulances and helicopters constantly. But you know what? I didn't feel isolated. I felt like I was part of something, you know, the hustle, the bustle, seeing people going about their day, working, interacting. You know, I was part of the community, which, by the way, Hannes, is also why I think I do very well in prison. I don't know if I ever told you that, but that's another story. All right, you guys, Fred Stoller is here right now. So wherever you are, don't go away. Hey, Hannes, I want to talk a little bit about one of our sponsors, Beso.com. You know, Beso now has a free app.
Yeah, I know that. It's awesome because it eliminates the part of shopping that I hate, leaving my house.
On the Beso app, you guys, you can shop for tens of millions of products from thousands of stores and brands, all in one simple app.
Yeah, it's a boredom buster. You can use it in line for coffee, or if you're in the post office, you can just scroll through and, you know, see what Beso's recommending for you.
Exactly. And then you can tell Beso, you know, your personal style persona, you know, like classic or preppy, rocker, and then they'll do the searching for you. It's amazing.
I think my fiance is probably a romantic feminine.
Which is why she probably would like to get married someday, Hannes.
That would be... Anyhow, I know I can get her great gifts at Beso.com.
Nice way to turn it around. All right, you guys, download the free app right now at Beso.com. It's like Pinterest, but for shopping.
Beso.com.
Next week on Storyworthy, we have comedian Todd Glass.
And I'll be talking about the pot cookie situation.
That's next week on Storyworthy. And we're back. We have been thrown out of Charles Lindbergh's house. I'm sorry, we have left Charles Lindbergh's house. We're in our mobile van, the Storyworthy van of truth, and we're speeding down the highway toward New York City, where we will try and not be isolated as we go into the hustle and bustle of Manhattan.
Okay, so, but you know I'm talking about isolation, though, Hannes, right? I mean, in other words,
yeah,
city life, you're never going to be isolated. I just don't, even if you're alone in your apartment and you don't have any friends, is that isolating? Because there's still people everywhere around you.
Yeah, but I mean, I used to be, you know, such a depressed person that I could be isolated, you know, being around people. Because I had this, like, cocoon of depression over me.
I see.
And so there'd be people in the room, and they'd be like, hey, why don't you come over here? And I'm like, don't you see this wall between us? This giant brick wall that I've put up in my own head? Your sister's house does sound a little... yeah, those rich neighborhoods, it's like everybody's in the house or at work, and maybe you see a couple of gardeners going down the street, and
right.
That's pretty much it.
You see a couple of shitty cars that are obviously the people that are working in the houses.
Yeah. What I love is, like, you go to Beverly Hills. I used to work for this lady in Beverly Hills for a little bit, and it's like, these are the most, you know, it's Tallulah Bankhead's old house and these beautiful mansions, and in the driveway is always some guy's truck with, like, 50,000 pieces of rakes and trimmers hanging off it.
Because he's the guy that works for that guy.
I know, and that guy's out of town. So basically, it's like that guy lives there.
He parks in his house. You know, the guy that lives there parks in it.
Exactly.
All right, you guys, Fred Stoller's here right now. Fred is a comedian, an actor, a writer, and a voice artist.
A bon vivant.
That's exactly right. He has worked on more television shows, Hannes, than anyone I've ever heard of. I mean, really. Here's just a few. Seinfeld, Everybody Loves Raymond, My Name is Earl, Happy Endings, The Sarah Silverman Program, Scrubs, King of Queens. And I could go on and on. In fact, he's written so many programs, ladies and gentlemen, he's written a book about it. It's called
He's written a book about writing?
No,
wow. He's eaten his own, he's going up his own butt.
He's written a book about the guest star life. And it's called Maybe We'll Have You Back. And it is darn entertaining, I'll tell you that. The man likes to work. You can find him on Twitter. That's a good place. @Fred_Stoller. Ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are, put your hands together for Fred Stoller.
Oh, thank you. I once made a vow to be fearless and break out of my isolation. I made up my mind that I'd talk to strangers, say hi, nod. It was something I was always too shy to do, but I told myself I'd start by taking baby steps, and then the whole world would open up to me. So I was walking down the street trying to do this, nodding, smiling and stuff. And then I noticed a woman who was trying to call her dog, but it wasn't listening. I looked at this as an opportunity. I would step in and try to help. Boldly, I said, "Hey, he should be on a leash." "Mind your business," she spat back. "I was just trying to be friendly," I said timidly. I really don't care if the dog's on a leash. I'm not judging you. This was an exercise for me. I was just saying anything. She forcefully corralled the dog by the collar and hurried away. I ran home, hid under the covers. So much for making small talk in my neighborhood. That was it. One night, sitting alone in my apartment, I heard a speeding car slam into another one. Actually, it smashed into about three cars, then took off. I, like scores of others from my block, went outside to see what happened. Luckily, no one was hurt. It was repeated many times amongst the converging neighbors. For most of us, this was our first time meeting and conversing. We introduced ourselves and began discussing whose car had the worst damage and if anyone had gotten the license plate of the hit-and-run car. We all waited around for the cops to come. One neighbor, Becky, whose car was totaled, was shocked but not devastated. She told everyone the car was pretty old anyway, and she was actually thinking of replacing it. I offered to help her bring the books and art supplies that were in her car upstairs to her apartment. All in all, the adventure probably lasted about an hour and a half. I wish it were longer, to be honest. I was enjoying it. Granted, my car was safely parked in my driveway. I liked hanging out, interacting, and feeling I was being of some help. A few months later, I was sitting on my couch talking to my friend while the afternoon news was muted on TV. I heard a lot of helicopters outside and didn't quite question the commotion at first. A few minutes later, I saw on TV a smoldering fire engulfing an apartment complex and the graphic Fairfax District explaining where the emergency was occurring. "Fairfax District, that's where I live," I told my friend as I picked up the remote to hear what was happening. The anchor said it was on a street that happened to be the same name as my street. And the sirens and helicopters outside sounded very close. I looked at my window and saw my neighbors pouring out of their apartments to get a closer look. I hung up on my friend and joined the onlookers to find out a small private plane had crashed into the apartment complex just a block and a half up the street. All six on board were killed, and an 80-year-old Holocaust survivor perished in the building. The scene was about 2.5 hours of talking to neighbors, watching the news crews, asking who survived and didn't. During this time, no one asked me to mind my business, and I found I could bravely talk to any one of them on the scene. Many people even talked to me, and again, I enjoyed it. I went home, and Jim, my next-door neighbor, said it best, "Hey, Fred, our block is famous." The excitement lingered for quite a while. An old girlfriend called to see if I was okay. I explained to her and others who called that I, in fact, was a block and a half from the crash. I found myself adding an unnecessary tone of bravado when I exclaimed how close I was to it. I even confessed on a few recounts I cut the half off and said I was just a block away from the plane hit. "That could have been me," I bravely boasted. I felt how noble I was being so close to the site, as if I had actually accomplished anything by sitting alone in my apartment channel surfing with the set muted. It still is a point of reference when I tell people who live in L.A. that I live on that block. "Oh, that's where the plane crashed," they explain. "Yes, it is," I proudly answer. A few months later, I was again in my apartment and I heard a terrifying sound, a screeching stop of a car, then a thud. I looked out and saw a man down and his dented bicycle by his side. I called 911 and the operator instructed me to hold a clean towel to where he was bleeding till the paramedics arrived. I scooted out with the towel and found he already had one by his bleeding head. He claimed he was okay, but the woman who got the towel to him quicker than I did told him he should stay down. She was an attractive woman who I was informed was a nurse who happened to be on the scene. Again, the neighbors converged to see what was going on. The paramedics arrived quickly and administered their aid, and against his reservation, took the victim to the hospital. The crowd lingered, discussing the frightening thud we all heard and that there should be a stop sign on the corner. And when the crowd dispersed, I felt sad. This one was too quick. I hadn't bumped into any of my comrades from the latest mishap on my block, although I fantasized about running into the attractive nurse and having the right to start a conversation. I could say I was the guy who also brought a clean towel downstairs. After a few months and no rendezvous, I doubted I would recognize the nurse anyway. Nothing on the block has reunited me with my neighbors lately. Well, I guess it's good that they finally put a stop sign in the corner. So I started thinking, what if I created a scene that brought everyone together again? Maybe I could throw a brick at a car. I'd pick a car that looked like it was on its way out. Of course, I'd never have the nerve to actually throw a brick. Or I could hire someone to do a little property damage, do something where no one gets hurt. No, I could park my own car in the street and do something to my own car, wake everyone up, and we'd all come out and see what happened and have a great reunion. This time I'd be better at remembering faces when we see each other later around the neighborhood. Can you believe what happens on this crazy street, I'd ask? Or I could say, I'm the guy you were talking to the time the brick hit my car. In the meantime, I feared that because so much time had lapsed, that if I did run into a familiar-looking woman and tried to talk about our mishap on a block, she'd say, trying to stop hitting on me. That's old news, asshole.
Oh, my gosh, Fred, that is... You do feel isolated.
Yeah, you don't have to live in Pittsburgh in the suburbs. I mean, I live in L.A., and like I said in the story, I don't know. I used to know a lot of my neighbors, but I don't know most people on my street. And that these little mishaps got us to talk. And by the way,
you seem to live on a cursed block because
it's right by the Grove. Yes. By the farmer's market.
Yes.
And this happened like in 99?
I remember this on
98.
The
98. I remember it too.
You remember it? Yeah, no, I'm always by the Grove. Yes.
And I would know it by that block. If you told me you lived there, I'd say that's where that plane hit the apartment building.
Yes, exactly.
You are known for that.
And like I said, it was like a feeling of like, hey, I'm so brave. It could have been me. And people being concerned. Yeah. Actually, the plane was trying to land in Fairfax High School. I think that's what they thought.
Yeah, I remember high school
being part of it. And it just missed.
Because it was in duress.
Yes.
The airplane
was coming down, so he tried to get it on the field at Fairfax High School.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it's weird. Like, I'm a misanthrope where I wrote about this in my book where sometimes I'll moan I'm so isolated, walk out, see someone I know and hide because he's annoying.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'm isolated, but not – it doesn't mean I want to be with any warm body. But what I like – I always talk about walking around the Grove at Farmer's Market is I'll bump into someone and have a three-minute conversation – and they're not someone in real life I'd want to call up and say, let's get together, but just these little mini interactions I'd like, or just the people watching, or, you know what I'm saying? So
now, would this be someplace like Park La Brea? I mean, because that's a big, huge complex near you. There's thousands of apartments there. And isn't that community?
I don't live in Park La Brea.
Sort of nearby in the middle
of
the mile.
I don't think I'd like living there.
But wouldn't that be more community-ish?
No, I don't think.
Nah, that could be isolating, too.
I have a friend who always
lives... Like you're hanging out in a rec... You know, look, there's no easy answers. I mean, they have this thing, I forgot what it's called, where these actors all move. I'd be so depressed. I put a gun to my head.
Oakwood
Park.
Oh, and
they come there, and they're in the rec rooms, and they're reading auditions. So,
I don't want
a community just for the sake of it. I've tried contrived things like support group meetings.
I understand.
So that's why I like where I live, because you have little random pockets of it. Like I did my book signing at the Grove, because I'm always there, and I know the guy Tim manager. So it's almost like I'm the mayor. Hey, and say hi to people at the kiosk.
Sure, and the farmers Poshmark has been there forever. And that does have more of a city quality.
Yeah,
to it.
Even the Grove. Kiosk guys are people at Barnes & Noble.
Right. So, in other words, you don't want to live where there's like a bulletin board telling you where to put your recyclables.
Or, and I've tried these support groups or whatever. Like,
what's a support group on
insulation? I don't know. When I first moved to L.A., I was so isolated. And my brother-in-law was saying, you got to go to AA. I don't drink. He goes, you have all the traits. And I went to Emotions Anonymous. It made no sense. It was so you try AA, hey, we're all this. So, well, when you mentioned the podcast festival, I went to Comic-Con a long time ago before it was what it is now, which exploded. And I remember there was some meeting voiceover, and one woman's wearing voiceover actress, and one I'm
like
a writer.
A panel or something.
No, it's like a mixer room.
Okay.
And I remember thinking that any convention, you know, when you're there thinking either for context or at a place thinking you're going to meet someone of the opposite sex, the pressure, and it's, I always want to do a bit like the desperate convention. Like, you know, that's what these conventions are, because you're there, the score, here's my stuff, here's my pager. So I always find either career or socially random, you know, bumping this one is supermarket where you're not there at the convention.
Right, it's much more organic.
Or the party or the thing.
It's so, not so contrived.
Right. So isolation to me isn't just city life, even though that would be maddening. Like, I picture myself living in Orange County. No, a lot of places I'd like to live, but as a single guy, like, people talk about how nice downtown is, a loft. That would be nice if I had a woman it felt right to be with, and then I'd come home to her. But if I'm just, and also writing, I need to get out. See, I don't have a day job, you know, so I need to get out of my apartment. So just have these interactions. So, and you mentioned about writing on Seinfeld.
Yes.
I did a Kindle single. That helped get the book. It was actually, it's free if you're on Amazon Prime, or just $1.99, but called My Seinfeld Year.
Now, that's a single from the book.
Yes, basically, it's almost like the analogy is the single, the book's the album. But yeah, first I did a single on Amazon.
It's kind of a newer thing, though, isn't it? Because they're quick little MP3s to download. I love that.
No. It's a book. You read it.
No, I know. But in other words, they're pulling a chapter and selling it independently.
Well, actually, first I got a Kindle single that did well, and that helped me get a book agent in the book.
Oh, I see. So it went from there.
Yeah, but I already had it written, and it was... And writing on Seinfeld was very – well, it's again, too – you could be on a sitcom and have loud, aggressive comedy writers, and that I'd want to put a gun to my head. I just would withdraw. But then Seinfeld was the other extreme where you're totally on your own, and no one's really helping you because they're trying to get their stories approved and written. So
it's isolating to be in that, which is the opposite of everything I've ever heard about sitcoms.
Yes, because you can't really write – and Jerry and Larry, who ran it, were – rewriting on the floor, editing, casting. So you couldn't do anything until you had a Jerry Kramer, Elaine, and Jerry Kramer, Elaine, and who's the fourth?
And George.
George, sorry, approved. And then so basically, I remember I'd wait outside their office for an hour trying to, you know, waiting for the door to open to pitch a story. And then finally these pushy young Harvard guys walk right in and right in front of me. Hey, and they got their story on. Then I tried, Fred, we're busy. So I would just nap in my office because Larry would yell at you if you started writing something up if you didn't get all the stories approved.
Right. So each one of the characters had a storyline.
Yes.
And all four had to be approved before you could go forward.
Right. And then you had to map it out. So there were times when I couldn't do anything. So I'd nap, I'd walk, I'd try to find Jerry or Larry, I'd go across the street, play pinball. So that was very isolating.
I read your book, and it's fabulous. In fact, I'm not quite through with it, although I am on page 1748.
Oh, you got the Kindle.
Because I got the Kindle on my phone. So
does Harry Potter appear in this book?
This seems awfully large. Well, each page probably has 28 words.
So it's
very funny. But it was interesting when you wrote about writing on Seinfeld that it wasn't in like a big table situation. In other words, everybody would go off on their own.
That's what I was saying, isolated.
And you never saw Jerry or Larry. They were just on their own.
Yeah, you'd see them here and there, but I would try to, you know, I'm not pushy. I don't want to bother you. Like, I was intimidated by Larry, and I'm not. So basically, and one time he said, it was a little story in the book, hey, you should get more aggressive and approach me. You got to find me. You got to be like these guys. I went, all right, well, now that I got you, how about this as a story? That's stupid.
Wow.
What the hell do you, and he yelled at me. So he goes, I'm sorry. I did tell you to throw anything out at me, but that was stupid.
Fred,
so that's why I was intimidated.
Do you think that might have changed, like, if Seinfeld were happening now, or what would be the situation now? What would the environment be? Because it would be on email, wouldn't it? I mean, we wouldn't just be waiting
that's
outside offices. Perhaps somebody would, you know, you just text
that's
them on
the
phone.
Interesting. No. That's interesting, but you still like the instant feedback if it's good or not, and Larry, I still
sit down and read
and Larry, I think isn't computer savvy. I think he still
does
writes it longhand, and mm-hmm. people write it up. Excuse me. It's interesting you say that because my book, I talked to my editor 3 minutes only, very nice woman, but there, and I have that with my book editor and my book agent where they don't like to take phone calls, and it's a lot of creative projects I've been working on.
Yeah.
It's easier to get them in an email, but either things get misconstrued or tone, or they think you're mad at them. I didn't have that with my book agent, but but sometimes you just want to pick up a phone, and I have a thing I'm working on now where, you know, I've been going back, and emails are great, but then finally had to get him on the phone because, I thought he was mad, but just go, you know what I mean? So it's weird. So I've been working. Like I said, my book agent, there'll be an issue, and I know she'd just rather email.
Yeah, sure.
I have that problem with email, too, because I'm very sarcastic, and that's hard to translate into writing.
Right.
I can read your emails that way, Hannes.
But
your voice
know
is
me.
Always in. Yeah, your voice is so in my head that
I write
a
email, comment on Facebook.
But
on
email is
thing.
Great because if you want a just quick thing, like, hey, this is a fun idea, a good title, or a thing, and it's quick. But sometimes either you're too tired at night or you just want to just really get the contact, the isolation.
Sure.
You want the voice. It's funny. I thought of a joke like, if texting were around when I was younger, I would be a lot closer with my sister. She can't talk on the phone. She feels more comfortable just texting.
Well, can you imagine if you were a parent to, you know, be able to read your children's Facebook pages, you would know more about their friends because you could go down the wormholes of their life. You would know much more about them than if you were.
Well, you know, in some ways, Facebook, it's good. Like, I'll do things. I'll make up stupid stories and then have people participate on Facebook. But it's an illusion. You're not isolated. You know, it's like I haven't been to New York in 10 years. And I was walking around and you really feel invisible and anonymous and insignificant because you don't have that in L.A. And there's 7,000 people on the street. And I have this illusion because anything you see on Facebook, I say I friend yes to everyone. And sometimes it's a mistake because they'll insult me. But I'll put something. A lot of people participate. So you have this illusion that, you know, the center of your universe, you put a picture of, this is my life, hey. And then you realize how it's totally insignificant. You know, I'll give an example. I went on an audition, an acting guest star part, and there were a bunch of people who were auditioning that have hundreds of thousands of Twitter followers, podcasts with so many followers, Twitter thousands. We have this illusion that on Facebook or we have get lots of responses or on Twitter that we have lots of followers, like we're very significant. But it doesn't mean.
Well, it's interesting, though. I hear what you're saying, Fred, and I'm totally on board, except for the fact that, like, for instance, this podcast, we've been doing really well recently. And in August, we hit like over 80,000 downloads. So in my mind, I say, well,
no, you should feel proud about that.
Well, I could have gone down to Starbucks and told my story.
No. I'm not saying this isn't significant.
Right.
I'm just saying that on Facebook and
people make appearances.
No, but it's personally like, you know,
I think I'm not lonely.
Talk to us.
No. That's legit when you get a certain amount. No, I'm glad to do this. I'll get people that want me to do their podcast on Skype, and it's just some guy in the Midwest talking. He wants to talk to me on the phone. So I got to
so
be careful
creepy.
I say yes
well,
to.
Well, you do have to be careful. And on Facebook, like, I friend a lot of people I don't know, too.
Yes.
But I have it, like, in my mind, my barrier is they have to follow at least 50 other people. Like, I have to
right,
be friends
we're promoting.
With at least 50. But I have to be.
Yes,
because
see
I
people in common.
I want people with one person in common that have no photo op.
Right.
That creeps
No. This is legit. If it's 80,000 downloads, I'm just saying about because we're expressing ourselves and we're getting stories out there. But the illusion of a lot of Facebook friends,
right.
significance. As it, I'm
no,
saying.
Right. But I think that in Facebook kind of shakes itself down. That the people that you know, like everybody kind of ends up being who they are.
Right.
You know what I mean? I've never seen any of my friends like turn out some kind of crazy thing on Facebook. Everybody is pretty true to who they are.
Well, it's interesting. I really didn't know how liberal some people were and conservative. Well, this guy had some good causes till you see on Facebook. So
right.
Sometimes it's
you
pretty
can
heartening.
Really yeah, learn about you learn,
how to defriend yeah. our relatives.
Oh, I can
Trayvon
stand
Martin thing.
Well, yeah, and I can't stand when relatives will tell my mother when I'm on a podcast, I say some really revealing things. Or in my book, by the way, my uncle cut out the last chapter and said, only read this, the rest will upset you. Now she's all upset she won't read my book, and people will
Wait,
tell her.
Wait, is that true?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. You cut a whole chapter
no,
out.
No, my uncle did.
I see.
This is the happy ending where Freddie accepts you, and only read this. Don't read. I was on Dr. Drew's podcast, and he called my mother up, and she's all upset about the book.
My gosh.
So I was on Mark Maron, and I'm talking about losing my virginity at 21, touchy subjects, you know, and he goes, "Hey, Freddie, I was on. I'm going to send you a tape." And I go, "What? You don't send that to my mother. I'm talking about her and, you know, my virginity." He goes, "Yeah, but you were talking an hour. I was proud of you." So some of these, I want to post. My sister didn't like. I'll send you a link of something with my mother, and she thinks I'm making fun of her. So, yeah, relatives can be annoying.
Well, Mark Maron and he and his father apparently are completely estranged now because of his book. So, I mean,
really?
It happens.
I didn't know
it definitely
that.
Happens. Here, let me ask you something. You were mentioning that Amazon single. Now, will they pull any of the other chapters out then? I mean, I understand you said that it was the chapter that got you the book. But now that there's the book, the stories really stand alone.
No, it is just. There's two different things. Kindle Singles is a thing on Amazon where I was lucky that I didn't self-publish. I mean, I put it up there without a publisher, but they have a main page.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go through them to, like, you know, and get it approved. And they did a nice cover, and they helped promote it. So then I was thinking of doing another single, but no other – I think all the other stories work towards one arc. But no other thing – there's other shows I've been on that it's big, like Friends or Raymond, but it didn't have the like little story of one. Those were a lot of stories within a big story.
Mm-hmm.
Seinfeld had the redemption of, you know, the bad tumultuous season, getting not asked back, getting brought back as an actor.
As a guest star.
As
and
a guest
so
star.
You really had so much more fun acting on the show than you did writing
yes,
on the
I
show.
Yes, I did. It was less tumultuous.
Oh, my gosh. You were like, in chapter three, somebody said you're too depressed to be a comedian.
My mother.
She said that. You're
yes.
too depressed.
That the chapter is called You're Too Depressed to Be a Comedian. Yes.
That's the name of the chapter. But at the same time, you know, it kind of works for you. I mean, in terms of,
Well, it works
well,
with
it
some
is what
people.
It is.
It is what it is. I mean, I've had – it was some guy, some big website, did a review of my Seinfeld year. And he didn't even review it. He reviewed how depressing I am on podcasts. So if I'm bringing it down, this is the most depressing loser. This guy's a piece of shit, this guy. And it the Kindle single skyrocketed after that. Because if someone wrote, you want to read about the most fragile, loser, depressing guy on Seinfeld, I'd go, I want to read that.
Yes, I do.
You know, rather than some slick Harvard guy.
Three kinds of press, good press, bad press, and no press.
But this guy was just, he wasn't even judging the Kindle singles.
Well, we get these reviews of our stuff, and it's like, there are people out there who are waiting to say something bad.
Oh,
it doesn't.
Yeah.
It's just you happen to run across the radar.
Well, no, you know,
and they're like you're scum. It's
well,
like
with the book, I don't read reviews anymore, or Amazon reviews.
Yeah.
But with the book and with the Kindle single, people love it, 5 stars. But then some people really get like there was a woman I met at this party, and she goes, "Your book's depressing." She goes, "I read the sample. I mean, my mother's like that." So I think I hit a nerve. Like people think
it's
I'm nebbishy.
So good.
What I mean?
It's such a quick read. It's really entertaining.
Oh no, thank you. So I'm saying,
and, you know, for me, it's entertaining, and I'm in the business, as it were, and I'm really knowing where you're coming from. But for somebody outside the business, they're gonna find it fascinating.
No, but I'm saying, in a way, it's complimentary if it gets some people mad that I'm hitting a nerve. Like I did a movie, Fred and Vinny talk about isolation. It's on Netflix streaming. And with isolation, the thing I just read, all my my stories are kind of like that. Sometimes it hits a nerve, an uncomfortableness that you got to be slick and overcompensate. When I admit,
you know, when people are mad at you for being
something
depressed
about
and not that I'm depressed,
but more
they're that's projection.
It's
they're
projection.
Like, you're making me realize how isolated, depressed I am.
Well, no,
and
it's
that's
also
why I'm mad about it.
People want to. They think you got to be slick and snarky and overcompensate, and maybe I'm bringing out something. Oh, you haven't made it. Like, people don't believe me. I live by the Grove. Sometimes I'll go in the lobby at the movie theater and like almost pretend I'm waiting for a friend. Maybe someone I know will come out.
Fred.
And now you're going, that's too sad, even for you, even for the story show.
That sounds very entertaining.
I don't park at the Grove going, I'm going to stand in the lobby. It's not that pathetic, but I'm saying sometimes it's like they don't know. No, I
Nobody
have nowhere
knows.
To go. I'm just
do
a regular guy.
You ever check your wrist and you don't even have a watch on?
No, all right, that's sad. That would be sad if I drove to the Grove Park
just to
go to the lobby and wait at the movie. Okay. No, if I'm already doing
Did
things.
One day, Bill Murray will come out and say hi to you, and that'll be like the greatest story in the world.
No, here's what I've done for sure, is I've walked into a restaurant that I know nobody's at.
And you
I'll
pretend you're waiting
and
for
I'll
a friend.
Pretend, well, or I'll look over like, I'm on my way, like if I'm in the lobby.
Yeah.
And how about now, you've done a lot of stand-up comedy as well.
Well, this is what damaged me. Yeah, because, you know, I'm socially inept because I don't know how to meet women and stuff, but I used to stand there when people would come out hoping one of them said you were funny, and then I'd go and try to talk. Oh, really? Thank you. So I still have that. Like, I'll be at, like, a movie, you know, of course, that I'm not in, and I still had that conditioning of people coming out thinking, they go, you were good, you know. So it's this icebreaker where I'm socially retarded. I know it's incorrect to say
you
that.
You can tell people you were cut out.
But you know what I'm saying? But I had the false icebreaker hoping they recognized me or hoping they saw my set. So,
but isn't that the desire for approval that every entertainer
But it's an icebreaker
has.
Where, but then when I don't have it, I'm pretty bad at, you know, it's socially. That's why I need the car accidents on my block and the.
What do you think about the
plane crashing?
That were in New York during 9/11? Boy, they got stories.
Yes. You could just go up to anyone.
Did you want to be there?
That would have been awesome. You could go to that late.
That would have been your job.
Yeah, I'm
though.
Sure they could talk. Well, I'm sure it's like anything where, remember after 9/11, even here, like, people are good. They let you go ahead. They're courteous. And then they went back to being assholes really quickly.
I mean, really quickly.
People, life is short. You know, life is delicate. And then, fuck you. That was my thing on life.
That went by very quickly.
Yes.
I just have to say, I know we're going to wrap up, but I just, for me, your episode that you wrote, The Soup, introduced one of my favorite Seinfeld characters ever.
Oh, thank you.
Kenny Banya.
Yeah, it's a true story.
The hack comedian who desperately wants to be Jerry's friend.
In real life, a guy did give me an Armani suit, and I had to give him a meal for it. So
yeah,
based
no, I
on
figured
a true
that
story.
Had to have happened. And did you keep running into this guy?
That guy actually demanded more because... I gave him he gave me a suit, which I found that he got from a discount rack. And then when I wrote a Seinfeld, he goes, not only did I give you an Armani suit, you made money, you wrote an episode. Take me to a real place, not Jerry's Deli. So I took him to the Palm, and he's getting everything out of the cart. And I said, I'm never seeing this schmuck again.
See, guys, there's this. Talk about, you know, social awkwardness. It's like comedians, sometimes they'll, like, latch on to somebody that they'll be like, oh, well, this person is – or successful or funnier than me. And it's like, and instead of being like, hey, you know, we could be friends, it's like, I want to spend time with you. It's like, you're like, that's not how people
that's
talk.
Not it. That's creepy. Yeah. Yes. Fred Stoller, here's a line I pulled out. It's one of your personal quotes. Why pay a dollar for a bookmark? Why not use the dollar for a bookmark?
Right. One of my old jokes.
That's really smart.
Thank you.
That's really goddamn smart is what it is.
But Kindle people have bookmarks anymore.
Listen, you do like the Twitter, though. You tweet.
Yes. Look.
I'm sorry to come back to this, but...
I'm not putting Twitter down.
It's a new vernacular. Things
no, all I, my analogy was that there were guys at this audition that had hundreds of thousands of Twitter followers or something.
Because I could see me thinking,
if I had a few hundred thousand going, yeah, I'm big in the business, but he still had an audition.
Right.
My analogy.
Well, in your book, you talk about, you know, you were on Matt LeBlanc's show way before Friends.
Yes.
But he had a hit on his hands. And then when they canceled that show, I can't remember the name of it.
Vinny and Bobby.
They canceled Vinny and Bobby, and then you see him in a commercial audition a month later.
Yeah.
Same audition.
Yeah. We were
a month after. I'm sorry. After the nanny went off the air.
No, it's a show called Vinny and Bobby.
No. I'm sorry. I was just saying it's like the guy who played Maxwell Sheffield on The Nanny for like 5 years.
Yeah.
Like they went off the air the next month. I saw him in a voiceover audition, not one that I was in.
Oh,
like,
no. But voiceovers, everyone, unless you're Brad Pitt, everyone. Oh man, that's brutally competitive.
No doubt about it. That's why I have a studio now in my closet. You know, a lot of people do that. You know, they've got the voiceover studio in the closet. It gets very hot, I'll say that.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, do you want to play some Shotgun Story with me?
Sure.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Kids, okay. This is a story about kids. I always see them at farmers market running around, throwing cups. And you know, I always have to move to another table. So one time I was sitting at farmers market by myself and I saw a kid screaming and I was going to move. But then the woman, I like the butt cleavage, you know, the ass crack. So I had to make up my mind. Do I want the view or the thing? So I opted for the view. So I tolerated the kid screaming. So it's a decision you have to make.
Okay, so you aren't having kids. Is that what I'm hearing?
I'm too old. I don't know. Again, I'm sure they always say it's not about money, but if you're Ben Stiller with seven nannies, I'm sure.
Do you have a significant other?
No, I don't.
Are you dating?
I had to think for a second. You know, you have the illusion on Facebook with flirting that you are, but I'm not dating.
Yeah. Have you even thought about those the dating sites and the whole online thing?
Well, the problem is that I'm not a celebrity, but people think I am. So people say, hey, you know, I saw the guy from Survivors on my site.
It's super
so I don't
tricky.
Want to be that. I don't want to be that guy.
Super tricky.
And chemistry is weird because you could think I like this or like that on paper. Then you bump into someone. Oh, that's not on my list. So I it's too exhausting to write up a bio. And dating is it sucks because, you know, you blind date. You just know right away and you're there. And
it's very, very difficult.
So I'd rather have a random thing.
Yeah, that thing where you make the list. I like this and this. It's like the people you end up with are not people who like the exact same movies and activities.
I just joined a dating site for the first time. Listen, I'm blushing. Yes. You can't hear it, people, but I am. No, but for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
And it's only been like 2 weeks. And it turns out I am a 92% match with my girlfriend, Carolyn.
It's another problem is like sometimes I'll be on a crazy date with some woman and she'll talk about being on Match.com and this guy, you know, this guy. So I think I have a feeling if I was one of these dates, it'd be the crazy people I date or bump into in my regular ridiculous life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it would give you a lot of stories. I'm saying
it would be the same. I think you have the same odds, just the randomness of just living your life. And even on Facebook, it's not a dating site, but you get a sense of your flirt. You know what I mean? Whatever.
Yeah. Sure.
But
it's all very tricky.
The only thing
I will say about like the online dating that I have experienced. The only thing I'll say that kind of quickly weeds out is age, although you don't really know if they're the age they
say they
are.
But if I put on my age, which I won't say now, probably 89% of the women wouldn't want me. But I think if we randomly bumped into each other, they wouldn't be so aware.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, I kind of like that just because, well, anyway, but I have a broad age range, I'll say that.
Okay.
But also, like kids. Like if you have kids, don't have kids, or want more or don't want more, that can kind of help a little bit, because if you just see somebody at the Grove or whatever, how do you know? You don't know anything about them. You got no facts.
No, I don't know. Walk up to people, but yeah, no, I'm not saying it's totally out of the realm. But like I said, the craziness, randomness of my life, I probably would do the same odds of if I was on a dating site.
Well, maybe I'll hang out with you at the farmer's market or something. You know, we could do that.
Absolutely.
Although there's a lot of crazy people down there.
There's
too.
Crazy people everywhere.
That's
true. You know, we say showbiz, but oh man, nurses, teachers, you would think.
Everybody's fucked up.
I just heard my accent with that. They wanted me, my agent wanted me to audition, and I knew right away it was a waste. He goes, this new show, Fargo. I go, oh, I'm a New York Jewish accent. He goes, you got to do the Fargo accent. I go, I'll be wasting my time.
Yeah, I gotta go. Oh, sure.
Yeah, my name's Fred.
Up there where the bus turns to corner around.
That's
yeah.
Not
this
I
has
do.
Been such a treat. You're such
thank
a talent.
You. Thank
really
you so much.
Thank you, Fred. All right, you guys, we're going to wrap it up right about now. I'd like to thank a couple of people, including Sean Merrick here at Sideshow Network.
Yay.
And, of course, Jorge Reyes. On behalf of our storyteller tonight, Fred Stoller, and of course you, Hannah Spinney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Story-Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.